Hello and welcome to The Preservationist, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. My name is Astronomus Ray, and I'm the president of the board at Lower Columbia Preservation Society and the host of The Preservationist. To begin today's show, I'd like to pose the question to you as a listener. What is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the sentence, the philosophy of preservation? I'll start by sharing my answer to this question. When I first heard the sentence, the philosophy of preservation, one thing that I initially thought about was connection and the passion that I have personally grown for historic preservation. And when I first started with Lower Columbia Preservation Society, I was a summer intern with Rachel Jensen in 2020, and since then I've grown such an appreciation for history and culture, the stories that buildings and sites can tell, and it's just this almost path that connects me to the past, as well as makes me think about the future and what historic preservation can become and how much more I can learn about historic preservation. And I think one of the big themes that I feel like with historic preservation is staying curious. And I always like to know more about things, because once I know the story behind something, it always just opens a whole new door, another opportunity to really feel like I can learn and connect with these things. And that's something that I try to take on with the role of being president of LCPS, is how can I learn more? And what else is out there in historic preservation? Who can I meet? Who can I talk to and connect with about this subject? So, with that being said, I have very special guests today. I'd like to introduce local philosophers Seth Tishner and Gad Perez Tishner. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the lectures as well as teachings and all the different things that you do in the community in the realm of philosophy?
I was a philosophy professor for well on 30 years, I suppose. I've taught at a number of places. I taught it at University of Hawaii, Oregon State University, Linfield College, now University, and of course, dear old Clatsop Community College. Been teaching for a long time, but there was a period where I began to realize that one of the best things about teaching is being able to talk with people about ideas and help bring that out. And doing that when a purely academic environment is not always as easy as being able to do it just with people out. And when Gad and I got together, she really was the one that proposed that we begin doing this on the road, and that's when our long and lovely collaboration on this thing called Philosopharian began.
Yeah. For me, I went back to college as a non-traditional student, and I thought it was going to be this grand awakening. I was going to get this education. I was going to learn these ideas about the world, and that was not what happened at all. There was a lot of following deadlines and guidelines and just doing what somebody instructed me to do. Philosophy was the first time that I really got challenged to use my thinking and look at the structure of my ideas. And I'd already decided through my own experience and working with children that the education system was pretty broken. So at that time, I had wanted to start my own school. So when Seth and I ended up getting together and he was finding that he was disillusioned with the education system, but already had all the experience as a professor, and I had experience in administrative and logistical and, just making things happen, that the time frame for being able to go out and educate was truncated, which was awesome. And so that's when we said, well, heck, let's just try to do it on our own, because philosophy mm-hmm. is a great way to get people thinking.
Yeah, and since then, you've done so many different things in our community for philosophy. You guys do monthly did lecture series, and you do something new, Philosopherian. Mm-hmm. What is that project?
Well, that's actually the name of our nonprofit, and that we sort of the auspices of these different things that we go under. But you're right, we do. We've got the lecture series. We've got regular discussion groups. We do public classes for free for people to come to, and different sorts of topics. We're just wrapping up one on classical Chinese philosophy right now, and then we also do tutorials where people want to do one-on-one study with things, and we do some kind of different art project types of things too. Sometimes we've done things with Art Walk or with different groups, sort of collaborating, just like we're doing right now. So.
And, you know, you guys have so much, enthusiasm about philosophy. And one idea that we kind of brought to the table is this philosophy of historic preservation.
That's
and
right.
What that can mean. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know what your guys' initial thoughts were about historic preservation in the terms of philosophy.
Well, I mean, I can only speak for myself on this one. But I think one of the things that struck me about this was that I think about philosophy as thinking in slow motion, taking ideas that usually go at very great speeds and kind of slowing them down, looking at their nature, their texture, their composition, and from that, their possibilities. And so when I do that and I think of that in relation to preservation, like, well, what is this thing called preservation? Why is it important? Who makes decisions about it? I think it's a fascinating thing. There's a quote I like very much by the writer Italo Calvino, that says, the most enlightened houses ooze ghosts. And I think that there's a way in which, when I contemplate that philosophically, think, oh, you know, that these buildings, these structures, these points within the larger geography of where we live, express and raise up these ways in which things carry an echo of meaning and significance, an echo that's part of us. And to know what that is and how to incorporate that story because of the way in which a door is framed or a window, it has a crack even, or the way in which things are painted, I just think it's a wonderful thing to contemplate. Every little physical part of these edifices has a story to it, a story that's being told, but also a story that can be contemplated and considered. What is the place of that story within larger stories? And that's one of the things I think is interesting about it.
I think part of what we do with Philosopharian is we recognize that people from all walks of life with all kinds of different interests and hobbies and fascinations and work, they like to think deeply about what it is they do and why they do it and what they care about. So I certainly have lots of ideas or thoughts about time and temporality and our presumption that it's linear and why on, like, what would preservation even mean in that sense? But I am more curious about people who do this as their life work and their life passion. How do they follow that and where do they think? And I think that that's kind of like where we shine with philosophizing, is like being deeply interested in other people and then following, you know, where does that idea take us?
Yeah.
And exploring together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of leads me into this next question. We talked a little bit about historical buildings and the intricacies of them and how detailed they are. What is like the meaning behind that? Because like nowadays, we don't see that intricacy. You know, it kind of changes our thinking a little bit. Does that make us appreciate more of like what efforts people have put in the past? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, there's a way that all of our physical tracings, as it were, tell a kind of story about who and what we are. The way that we, not just what we cared about or, you know, the colors we liked or what was fashionable when some such and such was put down. It does say those things. And maybe on a slightly deeper level, even the knowledge of and preferences for how and why we would put things together. But I would say there's even more basic tracings than that. I mean, the way in which, for instance, a building occupies space, the way in which rooms are put together, if there's a dining room or a tea room, the living room, and then what was 150 years ago, the death room, where you would take the bodies of family members who had passed away, and have, then you'd go to the living room where the living were. Those kinds of things.
That was actually a transition that was done. I think it was by, it was a women's magazine for an unused room in our home, because it was where you viewed death.
Yeah.
And so they were trying to take back a whole room that women had to take care of, but never ever used.
Yeah.
And so they decided to rebrand it as a living room.
Right. That being able to do things like that, this shows something about what it is for people to live. I mean, it lifts up their values. It lifts up their sense of identity. It lifts up what they hope for. It lifts up the way in which they organize their lives. And that's all in the traces of how everything is put together. So being able to have a sense of what that is, to articulate that, to care for it in a particular way, to trace it with both the stories that we tell about it and know about it, and then even more so, being able to kind of to fix it and to care for it physically, but on its own terms, you know. I think this is a very important thing, because it connects us, amongst other things, to a much larger world in terms of culture and even time. You know, it expands ourselves, and anything that can help us do that, I think, is a deeper thing for human beings to do.
I don't know that I would say that all older buildings, or even most of them, were more intricate than what we have today. I think that there may have been a sense that people tried to preserve some of that, but if we go back further, I mean, we can see changes in buildings when the plague happened, and how all of the skills for the carpenters and the masons, they were lost because so many people died.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at, when we think of Gothic architecture, we do think of these like crazy high spires, but like what was more common was a really steep roof.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that more to what we try to hold on to than the intricacies, I think a lot of people are looking for their place within our grander story. I think we don't really like to talk about what's the meaning of life anymore, but I think that a lot of people are looking for that.
Yeah.
And one of the spaces that people find meaning is their relationship to how they understand the past, and houses and buildings tell a story about that,
mm-hmm.
that you can connect to physically today still.
Yeah, and then that brings up a really interesting point of, like, that connection and everything. One thing that's interesting about historic preservation is how it evolves over time. You know, as time moves on, we don't have those same buildings, or maybe even the same methods we use to build those buildings.
Because we don't like to use poison in the wallpaper anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Even as pretty as arsenic is.
Oh, it's such a good green.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there's different changes, and you know, we find out these things throughout time. So I kind of wanted to touch base on the evolution of historic preservation and what that might even look like. Is this something that we're going to continue on for years? Are we still going to keep preserving the same buildings, or how does that look?
That's
like
a good question. I think we always will, because I think storytelling and a connection to larger things is something that's pretty deep in the human psyche. I think that will go on. But I do think that the way that preservation goes on also changes along with it. I mean, there's a certain, if you can see this in terms of the way that museums have worked, for instance, over decades and centuries, that quite often you go back 100 years and the way that preservation, you know, a more formalized form of preservation like a museum would represent older cultures or things from far away would be something that today we would find either tacky or maybe racist or something. And I'm quite sure nobody doing that at the time thought that was the case. It's just that that's what the standards were, and that's how the narratives were, and then we began looking at the way that we told the story and what that meant, and we go, yeah, maybe we should do it differently this way. I'm sure, I can't imagine that something like that is not going to happen with what's happening right now in the future. That's just the way that these things proceed. I think it's a deeper part of how humans think about their own storytelling. They tell stories about the storytelling,
mm-hmm.
and memories about the way that they remember, histories about how histories are put together. And all of that's part of the larger process of how that comes. So I think it will continue to happen. I'm curious to see where it goes. And actually, it's one of the reasons why philosophy collaborating with it is helpful, I think, because one thing that philosophers can do is be there along the side and have conversations like we're having right now of saying, well, what's this mean? What's this preservation doing more deeply, rather than just looking at the specifics of how you would do it?
I like to think about what will be erased, what will be lost. I think that people will continue to try to preserve. But in our buildings, they still have to serve some kind of function. And we don't really know what life will look like. A lot of people are thinking deeply about the emergence of AI right now. And what is life going to look like in 50 years or 100 years, given that functionality is going to be completely shifted from how we understand it today? Even when homes and buildings are getting preserved now, even just renaming happens, right? Like, we don't really talk about the butler's quarters or the fact that those stairs over there are shoddy and steep and tiny because they were for servants. We call it a butler's pantry, not like where the butler lived. you know, we make those kinds of shifts with everything we do. So it's interesting to try to think about what today might be eliminated or rebranded, so to speak, about the way that we currently live, because it doesn't serve either cultural or utility functions for the future.
We'll return back to our interview with Seth Tishner and Gad Perez Tishner in just a moment. But first, I'd like to introduce my fellow board member, Marcus Lucero, to tell us about this month's LCPS Topics in Preservation.
Thank you, Astronomus. Hey, Astoria, have you ever needed a tool but didn't have the right one on hand? Or you couldn't afford an expensive tool you'll rarely use? What if there was a place where you could borrow tools just like checking out a book from the library? Join us in Topics in Preservation on Wednesday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the LCPS headquarters on 12th and Duane in downtown Astoria. We will be discussing the creation of the North Coast's first tool lending library. Come share your thoughts, ask questions, and join the discussion. Again, that's Topics in Preservation, March 19th at 6 p.m. on 12th and Duane.
Thank you, Marcus. LCPS presents another program on the history of Lower Columbia region. Coming up on Tuesday, April 15th, the Lower Columbia Preservation Society presents a program about the Lewis and Clark Expedition in the Pacific Northwest. Join Lewis and Clark historian Tom Wilson and discover how the Corps of Discovery survived the harsh North Coast winter of 1805 through 1806. Learn how they established winter quarters, found food, made their clothing, how they were able to obtain salt to preserve meat for their homeward trek. Join us for this narrated PowerPoint program at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, April 15th at the Pacific Distillery, located on Astoria's historic riverfront. The presentation is free and open to the public. Seating is limited. Now returning back to our interview with Seth Tishner and Gad Perez Tishner. Why might it be important to question the reason or the passion that you may have for something like historic preservation?
I used to have an assignment that I would give to students where I'd call it a theoretically investigative question. And what I would do is I'd ask them a question. I'd say, think of a question that you would like to ask that you don't know the answer to. You'd just like to contemplate. And I would say, if you know the answer to the question, or you can get to the answer to the question, it's not a good question for us. I want you to ask a question just so that you can contemplate it and consider it and think about new ideas with it. Because as Gad was saying, there's a way that questions beget questions beget questions beget questions, and it opens things up. And when you can craft a good question and build something more, the world opens up that way. Well, these little things that are part of our material world can do so much for us with this. I grew up in Portland, and I spent a lot of time up here too, seeing my grandparents. And I remember as a really little kid learning that those little loops on the sidewalk were for horses. Yeah. And I was probably about 5 years old or so, and I looked around. I didn't see any horses or anything, but I thought, oh, wow, So you'd put like a horse there, or maybe even a carriage, and it was right there. You could do that. And I'd look around and think about the ghost horses and stuff. And the fact that, you know, my mind was doing that just with this little metal loop that was rusting on the edge of some pavement and moving that way. This is an illustration. Your mind opens up with questions that you consider and want to know more about. And I think it's not a matter of getting the answer. I think it's a matter of finding more and more and more to recover from the mind's exploration of these possibilities.
So that kind of brings up my next question. I know we talked a little bit about the future, but what do you hope to see for future preservationists as people start to get into this field?
I think for us as philosophers, what we always hope for is to see reflection and thoughtfulness, for people to consider, why am I doing what I'm about to do? Is it because it's the process and what is always done and because this is my job? Or does it fit into who I am and what I would like to be and what I would like in the world? Being thoughtful enough to see whether those ideas actually fit together. Because we hold so many ideas that are often disparate in our minds. So for somebody who was coming into preservation, I don't have any, you know, I hope that you're going to use mushrooms to grow instead of that wood that we have to get from a place that doesn't regulate. I don't have any logistics like that, but that they come into it with a space to consider, why is the project important, valuable, has the space it has, and does it even have the capacity to do what the project says it's meant to do? Has anybody asked any of those questions? Being willing to be curious and to ask the questions and then to really pursue them would be, you know, from the philosophical perspective, I hope you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I would echo a lot of what Gad said. I think the other thing, though, that I would say is it seems to me that when I think about how preservationists work, they're always trying to find ways in which things that were just mundane and overlooked have a significance, and you can see the special way in which it fits together. And I hope that as we proceed forward in the world together, just as people, we can find more and more ways in which things that might have been overlooked, including stories, persons, ways in which something might have even been taken for granted in ordinary life, can be put together in a way where we can elaborate on the story in ways that we wouldn't have done before. I have heard, I remember reading an essay many, many years ago in aesthetics, so theories of art and beauty and sense, about Klingit art. And one of the things that was mentioned in this essay was that artists would always leave one part of the work that they were doing unfinished with the idea that it could always proceed forward. There was always a way in which things could proceed. That is a magnificent way of articulating kind of the point I'm trying to get to with this too. There's always ways to proceed forward. There's always ways in which to investigate more, and we can always work these things together more and more and more to give a kind of expression to the stories that we tell and make.
Yeah, absolutely. I really love that idea that we always have this opportunity. Now, as we wrap up this show, I kind of wanted to kind of keep an open discussion in the sense of, what do you hope people get out of this conversation and this thought of what the philosophy of preservation is?
We would invite you to come to the collaboration talk that we're going to have at Wit and Wisdom with LCPS. And then
we've got that again.
We have the Wit and Wisdom lecture series at Fort George on April 10th. That's the second Thursday. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the talk starts at 7. And Seth will be speaking with Rachel and Eric from LCPS. Then we have the following week on Wednesday, April 16th, starting at 5:30 at Breakside. That's our group chat. So both of our groups always have a group chat on Wednesdays. So we're joining forces at Breakside together. That's where we're going to really be able to dig into ideas and share. All of our minds work so differently, and our experiences are so different. We've come from different cultures. We grew up in different spaces. And so our minds find ways to different kinds of questions and ideas about what preservation is. And that's the fun part for me about philosophy, is getting somebody coming and you're like, what? How on earth did your brain go there? That's so fascinating. Let's take that further.
The lasting thought I would have for it is everything we've just been talking about. I think it's the way in which preservation opens up new questions and new ideas for things, thinking about what has been left behind and what where we can go with these ideas. I think in many ways, the thing that I think philosophy can bring to anything is, in addition to sort of opening up questions upon questions and new possibilities, it also brings you to a place you say, but what is this and why is it significant? That's the place that so much, for me, so much philosophy starts with. And if you can ask that question, not as a practical, okay, and this is where we're going, but in a deep way where you really contemplate it, I think the act of contemplating that itself perpetually while you're doing it, it'll make whatever you're doing, including the work of preservation, 100 times deeper and richer and more worthwhile, because you will always be cognizant of all of these aspects that you're doing and not just this one little part here and here and here and here and here.
That was a fancy thing. He said it the fancy way.
I liked it. It was great. Well, thank you both for joining me here on the show, and I appreciate you taking the interest in historic preservation and wanting to collaborate it with the sense of philosophy. And I hope our listeners do take the opportunity to join us at our events and, you know, really expand on this topic further, because there's so much that we can talk about with
this. Please do. We'd love to chat with all of you out there. Come by, find us, and we'll talk philosophy and preservation. It'll be a wonderful thing.
Well, thank you so much. I'm Astronomist Ray.
Seth Titchener.
And Gad Perez Titchener.
And you have listening to The Preservationist. And when it comes to preservation, remember, anyone can be a preservationist. And that has been this month's episode of The Preservationist. I'd like to give a special thanks to my guests for this month, our two local philosophers, Seth Titchener and Gad Perez Titchener. I appreciate you both taking the time to come on the show and share your thoughts about the philosophy of historic preservation, as well as meaning and different ideas that come along with that discussion. Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of The Preservationist. We hope you tune in again with us next month. The Preservationist airs every third Tuesday of the month at 9:30 a.m. on KMUN. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the staff, members, and volunteers of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, and I'd like to thank you for listening today. For more information about the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, be sure to visit our website, www.lcpsociety.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. The Preservationist is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomist Ray. Until next time, I'm your host, Astronomist Ray. Thank you for tuning in.